Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Initially requested to assist the U.S. Secret Service at the Butler rally by providing two counter-assault teams and a quick reaction force. Later, two sniper teams were added to that request during the planning process. We were assisted at the Butler rally by the Beaver County Emergency Services Unit, the Washington County Regional SWAT Team, and pre-hospital staff from Allegheny Health Network. Beaver ESU provided a second armored vehicle with a counter-assault team and two police snipers. Washington Regional SWAT provided four tactical operators and two police snipers. Across the two counter-assault teams, the quick reaction force, the three sniper teams, and support personnel, we provided a total manpower of 44 persons, exceeding the number requested by the Secret Service.
So President Trump is scheduled to go back to Butler on Saturday, tomorrow, and do a rally at the same exact venue where he was shot. And so the relevance of investigating what happened and how they might prevent such a thing from happening again in the future is pretty urgent, you know, since it's right now. It's tomorrow, okay? So this recent hearing in the Congress about this with several members of the actual, like that was Edward Lentz, who was the co-local tactical unit, the commanding officer for the local tactical units for Adams County Police Department. You had another guy here who was John Harold, a lieutenant for the Pennsylvania State Police. So you had a lot of like actual snipers, and then you had a couple of Congress members who are themselves former snipers. One was SEAL Team 3, and the other one, I forget who the organization, but he was in the military, not with a sniper billet, but he did sniper work elsewhere. Anyway, so there was a lot in this, a lot that we did not know already, and confirmation of a lot that we already did know. Remember, after the Butler attack, and when the Secret Service head went and testified and basically blamed local law enforcement for the failure, which was outrageously stupid and wrong and turns out to be a complete lie. For example, they weren't tasked with that building at all.
At no point during the planning process was Butler County ESU asked to secure the AGR complex, nor the perimeter surrounding that area. At no point during the planning process was Butler ESU asked to deploy a sniper team to the roof of the AGR complex, and at no point in our operations plan did we ever say that we would deploy a sniper team to the roof of the AGR complex.
So it wasn't them at all in any way. That's the building, of course, that Crooks climbed up on top of and shot the president from and killed Corey Comparator and, I mean, you know, injured several other people. We don't talk about them all that often, but, you know, also worth noting. And here's what's interesting is it was the local police that identified him as a threat.
Beaver County sniper in the AGR building was able to take a photograph of the suspicious male while he sat near the AGR building, and again later saw him using a rangefinder pointing towards the stage. And this information was promptly reported to the Pennsylvania State Police in the Secret Service Command Center, the Butler County Sheriff's Office, and the Butler Township Police Department. Had these officers not picked up on this suspicious behavior, we likely would not have known anything was wrong until shots were fired.
Yeah, so it's actually the locals that identified him as a problem. And by the way, this was amazing. I had read this, but I had not heard it mentioned anywhere else, and so I've been kind of reluctant to talk about this too much. But John, based on the news coverage that you have watched, who killed Crooks? Who shot him?
The sniper?
No.
Seriously?
Correct. Well, not the sniper. Well, who's the first one that shot him?
The sniper?
This is the point. It wasn't the Secret Service counter sniper that was the first to get a shot off at him.
Who was it?
Prior to those shots being fired, an operator from Butler ESU had exited the red barn behind the stage and was monitoring the AGR area due to the suspicious person reports. When shots rang out, he was able to quickly identify where the shots were coming from. He observed the shooter, he shouldered his rifle, he acquired his target, and he fired one round at the shooter, which caused the shooter to recoil and briefly fall out of sight. He did this less than 6 seconds after shots began, using his short barrel M4 platform rifle chambered in 5.56 with an EOTech weapon sight at a distance of approximately 110 yards. He remained on target, prepared to engage with additional rounds, and as the shooter slowly came back into sight, A Secret Service counter-sniper fired a round striking the shooter, ending the active threat.
So it was a local who shot, at least shot at him first. And that made him take cover, and then after that he got shot by the Secret Service counter-sniper. Now, they had the medical examiner on the line when they were doing this, and I would say we have an open question of whether he had been shot. The medical examiner, and remember, the body's been cremated already, so can't go back and examine it. The medical examiner claimed that there had been only one bullet wound, that only the Secret Service counter-sniper was the one who shot him. This guy was pretty certain. The deputy who shot at him with the M4 from 110 yards was really certain that the way he behaved, the way he reacted, that he had shot him as well. And, you know, so we don't really know at this point, I would say.
Senator Lentz, you mentioned that the local law enforcement activity fired the first shot. Is that correct? That maybe hit the, you mentioned maybe that he withdrew. Do you think he was hit? Or do you think he just sort of ducked because he was taking incoming fire?
In speaking with the officer that fired that shot, he's very confident that his round was on target. And the way he described him, it wasn't a duck.
Is the doctor still available and online?
Yes, I am.
Were there two bullet wounds in this individual or just one, the headshot?
No, it was just the one.
Okay. I just found it interesting that when we were briefed by the FBI, we didn't get told about that shot taken by the local guys.
Exactly. Like I said, I had read this about a week ago, but I had been kind of not talking about it too much because I wanted to get more information. But yeah, this is what looks like happened. Now, again, you don't have the body to examine. The ME says only one shot, you know, one bullet wound. There was a later interaction with one of the congressmen who kind of was a lawyer and kind of pushed on him about, are you sure it couldn't have been this and this and this? And I don't know. He was pretty adamant that there's no evidence that there was a second shot. But the point is, even if the bullet didn't hit him from the cop on the ground, that's a pretty major element of this story that had never been told, at least not really. You know, because the picture is that Secret Service was the one who took him out right away as soon as he started shooting. No. You know, somebody else had a major impact on this incident, one of the local law enforcement. Again, to the point of Secret Service, this outrageous blaming of the locals for doing it wrong, when in fact the locals, you know, did amazing stuff. So, again, who was asked to guard the AGR building? This is the Pennsylvania State Police, Lieutenant John Harold.
Pennsylvania State Police provided all resources requested by the Secret Service. The Secret Service did not ask me, as the officer in charge of PSP assets, to post a car, a trooper, at the AGR International property. Nor am I aware that Secret Service making that request to any other PSP official.
So they didn't ask anybody to do this, right? Secret Service completely failed on this task. But then there was another guy, Patrick Sullivan, who's a retired United States Secret Service, and he's on the board now. And he had some really interesting suggestions or recommendations in general about how things ought to be done differently. Here is one.
The FBI has exclusive jurisdiction to investigate a conspiracy to assault or kill the president before the attack takes place. Since the Secret Service is responsible for protecting the president, it should be part of all such threat investigations, so it can take appropriate steps to prevent an assassination. And finally, the FBI has authority under current law to seek the assistance of any federal, state, or local agency, including the military, to help investigate an assassination or assassination attempt after the fact. I believe the Secret Service should have similar authority to call for such assistance to prevent an assassination or assassination attempt.
Duh. If the Secret Service, who's responsible for protecting a bunch of protectees, not just the president, but let's, you know, focus on the one that we're thinking of this moment. If the Secret Service is, like, say, the protective detail for Trump, but the FBI is the one that investigates threats against Trump, but they're not required by law to talk to the Secret Service about what they're finding in advance or after the fact or anywhere along, they operate as parallel, not interconnected agencies. What? Of course the Secret Service should be entitled to any information that the FBI has, especially against possible future attacks against the president. How else are you going to know what sort of protection to give him and what sort of threats you have to be considering? That's just an amazing gap in the way these two entities are structured and how they interact. I mean, honestly, the whatever portions of the FBI are running down threats should probably be under the Secret Service's domain, not under the FBI's domain. It makes no sense. Also, remember one of the problems at Butler was that they didn't have the single unified command. The Secret Service wasn't even in the same command post where the Butler and the local PD folks were. They were in two separate tents, basically.
So one of the things I'm struggling with is this idea that there wasn't a single unified command station on site. The Secret Service did not establish that. Is that atypical in your experience? Would there normally be one command and control station to unify command and communications?
Yes, that's very atypical. I am very surprised. Normally, there will be an overall command post for the entire visit. Then each site will have what's called a security room where radio traffic pertinent to that individual site is controlled. And the command post, the overall command post, should be the state, local police, Secret Service, and other federal partners that may be assisting. So this is very unusual that the way it turned out here at this site.
Yeah, and then the intercommunication between those two should never be two command posts. It was crazy. In fact, the inability of the people who might be gathering important information to connect that information to the Secret Service directly. There was actually a point in this conversation, let's see if I can find the clips. I hadn't quite intended to play it right at this moment, but there was, yeah, this is amazing. The way, I'm just going to play this for you because this is amazing, okay?
All right, and on July 13th, was there a way to relay that photo directly to the Secret Service using, I don't know, whatever electronic means that you were in connection with the Secret Service with?
Remember, it was the snipers from Butler County that had gotten the photo of Crooks and observed him being a risky person, right?
I probably could have emailed it to them.
Email, okay.
However, the text message to...
All right, but not exactly the emergency scenario that this entails. You see a man with, on a roof with a gun, a potential threat to the former president. You don't want to send an email. You want to let them know immediately, right?
Correct. And we did have a phone list for the different agents.
There's a phone tree.
However, I'd already been speaking with the sergeant in the command center for different things, and it was significantly easier and faster just to send it straight to him.
Email? A phone tree? What is this, a fourth grade play? My God. Just,
All right, is it fair to say that this sort of emergency communications on that day hadn't been worked out in advance? Is that fair?
Yes.
All right, so this was sort of making it up as you go along on that day. Not in a critical way, but you're just doing what you need to do to communicate with each other under the circumstances and under the time constraints that you had.
Yes.
All right. And I think clearly, Mr. Sullivan, you'd say that approach to communications is unacceptable under any Secret Service protection scenario. Is
yes, sir.
Fair?
It's absolutely unacceptable.
The vein in my forehead. Just a guy died. Other people were wounded, and the former president and the Republican nominee to be president almost died, but for the turning of his head, but for the fact that this marksman was a total amateur and took a headshot instead of taking a body shot, as this professional snipers later on testified that because somebody's head is a hard target and can move. I mean, we got lucky, and now we've gotten lucky twice. And the Secret Service looks like the Keystone Cops because there are culture issues at the Secret Service, because there's no accountability at the Secret Service. I know everybody always says this, and it's true. The individual agents are fabulous, but they are working inside a structure of politics and resource deprivation and denial and incompetence and DEI that has already put the former president's life in jeopardy twice and killed one person and allowed, other people to be wounded. And here's the thing. The reason I wanted to bring this up today in particular, I mean, I had time in the show to kind of get it in. I'll talk about this the rest of the, 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock too. And trust me, this is sort of we're scraping the surface now. The better stuff is to come. As I always try to tell you, I save my good stuff for later. He's going to speak there tomorrow. And one of the two congressmen who was a sniper for SEAL Team 3 told this panel, do not let him speak there tomorrow. If he had his way, he would absolutely not speak there tomorrow because the venue itself cannot be secured. It's not a safe site. Even now that they know, there are too many buildings, too many opportunities, too much weird geography and fence lines, and you know the level of resourcing you would need to have to secure that site. He basically said it's a terrible idea for him to go back. And I hope he turns out to be wrong, obviously. But President Trump is about to go speak in the same place again when he's had recommendations for not to go there. So we'll talk about this. In fact, you know what? I think I can play it just right now because I was going to do this later. But where was the... I want to... Again, this is not a clip that I had been intending to play here. This is the one. This is from Eli Crane, a congressman.
Brett Mills and I also ranged several other buildings and windows that were well within range for anyone with a desire to assassinate the former president. Upon our investigation that day, we were informed that nobody was posted on nor had conducted any advance work amongst these very choice and accessible firing positions. Rep. Mills and I both concluded within minutes of observation from the same exact positions used by Secret Service counter snipers that this was a horrible venue for a rally, and Secret Service should have done everything possible to dissuade the campaign from hosting it there. To date, we have seen no evidence that Secret Service tried to dissuade the campaign from using the site due to the alarming threat profiles surrounding the site. Though I appreciate the former president's courage and strong desire to rally his supporters, I strongly suggest that he and his campaign avoid this site on October 5th and in the future.
When the SEAL sniper tells you not to go to a location that you already got shot at, I mean, you don't go to that location. 437-1620, I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. If you need hardware, you need supplies, you're going to build, rebuild, remodel something, Pensacola Hardware, right downtown. It's an institution. They've been there since 1850, 173 years, one of the 50 oldest businesses in the entire country, the oldest in the state of Florida. And you can get everything you need. You can get the advice you need, the institutional memory and knowledge from people who know how to do things, not people who are, you know, just kind of working there for a couple of years, that kind of thing. Like, they really know. They know. They are a resource. And in the front of the store, you can buy any gift for anybody that you love. And there's so much stuff in the front of the store as a gift place that you can, you know, Yeti merchandise, grills, cookware, gumbo pots, knives, all kinds of stuff in the front of the store. So the housewares and the hardware at Pensacola Hardware, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street.
Tommy! I can't wait for golf this weekend, huh, buddy? Time flies. Love you, man. Oh, don't forget your knee brace again. We aren't in college anymore.
Moments together matter. So help protect yourself from RSV. If you're 75 or older or 60 plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or severe diabetes, you're at higher risk of landing in the hospital from RSV. And there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
As a mom, comforting my family is what I do best. Vicks VapoStick provides soothing, non-medicated Vicks Vapors in an easy-to-apply stick. And it dries fast, so there's no mess. I use it to comfort myself and my family.
Thanks, Mom.
Vicks VapoStick. Soothing comfort for the whole family. And when you need more comfort for yourself, try Vicks VapoShower Max for steamy Vicks Vapors.
Use as directed. VapoStick for use ages 4 and up. VapoShower Max use for adults only.
Join Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola today at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Dr. Rebecca Gibbons will be here to answer your questions about the many benefits of acupuncture. If you suffer from chronic back pain, neuropathy, or joint pain, or even stress and anxiety, this is a show you will not want to miss. That is today at 9:30 with Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Campbell's makes everything.
Good morning, 528 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne, what did you say in the break, John, that the local cop that actually shot at Crooks first should be the one who heads the Secret Service?
Yes, I think that's a wise choice.
At least we'd have somebody that is willing to do the task and knows what they're doing. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, Andrew, the death toll from Helene just keeps going up. It's past the 200 mark now, and they're saying that number will likely continue rising. Of course, more than half of those deaths in North Carolina. The big news today, the dock worker strike on a temporary halt. The union and ports agreeing to a tentative deal that announced last night, but it was only hours after Governor Ron DeSantis had announced a plan to reopen Florida's ports using national and state guard troops.
Our residents need reliable, steady supply of resources and building materials to keep their families fed and rebuild their homes and businesses. And so we have a responsibility in the state of Florida to do everything we can to avoid, mitigate, or minimize these disruptions that will have a negative impact on the people of Florida.
And DeSantis, they're saying it was all about Hurricane Helene recovery. Mm-hmm. And he said he was sending soldiers to the ports to maintain order and resume operations. So there's no word on whether the dock workers' strike is affecting whether troops are still going. It's kind of all...
Nothing like threatening to take away the power to conduct the strike. And also mentioning that, you know, by the way, you're interfering with a massive... natural disaster recovery. Maybe you guys want to rethink the timing on this one.
It was a bad look.
January. January it is.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The three-day dock worker strike is over for now. Victor Conde is a dock worker in Brooklyn, New York.
They suspended it for now, and I think we're going to get a just deal and get what we deserve.
Ports are open this morning from Maine to Texas. Fox's Madeline Rivera.
The union representing the dock workers saying in a statement they and the United States Maritime Alliance have reached a tentative agreement on wages and have agreed to extend the master contract until January 15, 2025 to return to the bargaining table to negotiate all other outstanding issues.
The proposed 62% wage hike over 6 years if a deal isn't reached, the 90 days increase goes off the table. Former President Trump stops in Georgia today for a hurricane briefing with Governor Brian Kemp. The pair mending fences since that 2020 election dispute. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3 at 73 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies right now in Pensacola. An update on that shooting yesterday near Fairfield Drive in Escambia County. The victim from that shooting has died. Family members identified the man as Walter Lee McQueen Dukes. The shooting happened on the 3400 block of John Street. The sheriff's office says there's still no suspects in custody. An investigation is ongoing. A Gulf Breeze doctor that had been under a lengthy investigation is now facing two first-degree murder charges. 72-year-old Dr. Elaine Sharp was arrested on a Santa Rosa County warrant yesterday. No details have been released on those charges. Sharp's office had previously been raided by authorities after she was found to be improperly prescribing controlled substances. She'd been prescribing opioids for opioid addiction and pain management treatment. An order said Sharp issued more than 3,000 of those prescriptions between August of 2021 and August of 2022. She's being held in the Escambia County Jail pending extradition to Santa Rosa County. Well, police in Philadelphia are investigating a burglary on a ship destined for the bottom of the Gulf off the Destin coast. A break-in and burglary was reported on the SS United States yesterday. The United States Conservancy issued a statement thanking local police for their work in identifying the suspects. The suspects reportedly had taken flashlights and batteries and did cause a bit of damage to the ship. There's no word yet on arrests. Okaloosa County had approved a tentative deal to purchase the ship to use as an artificial reef last week. The Gulf Coast VA is now offering telehealth emergency room services for veterans. Vets that use VA healthcare can call their local VA clinic and press 3 on the menu, and that'll connect them with the virtual emergency room. The VA says this will offer some of the same services you could get in a traditional emergency room, but without the long wait time or the exposure to other illnesses. The VA says that they'll be able to help vets that have cold, flu, or COVID symptoms, sore throats, COPD or asthma issues, infections, minor allergic reactions, UTIs, or sprains. But for more serious issues, you'll still need to go to a normal emergency room. President Biden says there's progress being made as the recovery efforts from Hurricane Helene continue.
FEMA teams are knocking, literally knocking on doors to register folks so they can receive assistance to buy what they urgently need.
And speaking from Valdosta, Georgia, yesterday, the president said the direct assistance program for hurricane victims will cost the U.S. billions of dollars. He's asking Congress to ensure the affected states have the resources that they need. It is 5:34 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We will see plenty of rain today with a 60% chance of showers. Constant light rainfall through most of the day with a high near 80 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. For Saturday, rain chances drop, but we will still have the clouds around. 20% chance of rain with breezy conditions out of the east. High on Saturday near 84 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 69. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And thank you very much, Brooke. It is 73 right now in Pensacola. It's 74 in Gulf Breeze, and we've got 72 in Milton. Our next news at 6, we've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Investors are bracing for the release of the September's payrolls report later this morning. Economists polled by Dow Jones expect that non-farm payrolls will show growth of 150,000. This is up from the 142,000 in August. The unemployment rate is expected to hold steady at 4.2%. The report drops at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Dick's Sporting Goods will hire nearly 8,000 seasonal workers in anticipation of the 2024 holiday season. Recruiting efforts to fill the positions will begin October 8th. Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Sherrod Brown of Ohio have written a letter to U.S. Steel CEO David Burritt questioning how he will benefit from Japan's pending $14.9 billion takeover of the Pittsburgh company. The letter echoes criticisms stated by the union, which include concerns of Mr. Burritt's $72 million salary. Futures are mixed ahead of today's jobs report. That's Your Money Now.
Join Stefan Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at George Stone Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians, they hire students from George Stone Technical College. Have a boating question for Stefan? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Locally owned and operated, Pensacola Poolscapes offers a lot more than pool liner replacement and pool supplies. Imagine unwinding after a long day in your own luxurious spa where relaxation meets elegance. At Pensacola Poolscapes, they have a stunning selection of high-quality bullfrog spas and swim spas, perfect for soothing those aches, getting fit, and relaxing. And right now, they're offering end-of-summer rebate just in time to enjoy the upcoming fall weather. Visit them online at PensacolaPoolscapes.com or on Gulf Breeze Parkway across from Tiger Point.
Advertising, marketing, digital marketing. These are all words you hear a lot about in today's world, but what do they mean? How do you get started? You can start by tuning into the Pensacola Expert Panel this Monday at 10:30 a.m. Join me, Lexi Mendoza, and I'll show you how to navigate the fast-growing landscape of digital advertising this Monday at 10:30 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Hurricane Helene threatens the Gulf Coast.
Okaloosa County, Santa Rosa County, and Escambia County are still all clear.
When warnings go up, News Radio 92.3's full team coverage goes into overdrive.
Breaking into our Fox News coverage, we are going to go live to Governor Ron DeSantis, who is doing a press briefing.
When you need to know.
Maximum sustained winds were 140 miles per hour.
Hurricane season is not over yet. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all.
President Trump is going to Georgia to tour the devastation left by Hurricane Helene, while Vice President Harris is heading to battleground Michigan, a day after taking the stage with a prominent Republican. NBC's Alice Barr is in D.C. with the latest from the trail. And Alice, good morning. This was a sight that would have seemed impossible just a few years ago.
Another sign of how unusual this campaign season is, Francis. The daughter of former Republican Vice President Dick Cheney took the stage with the current VP. Liz Cheney backed Harris at an event in Ripon, Wisconsin, commonly known as the birthplace of the Republican Party.
So I have thoughts. I have thoughts, you know. We'll come back to this, well, let's say alleged news report. Let me put it that way. I say that I would not describe that as factually accurate, but alleged news report. We'll come back to this in a second. It is true. Liz Cheney got up and spoke on behalf of Kamala Harris and against Donald Trump at the rally yesterday.
Above all else, I know that the most conservative of conservative values is fidelity to our Constitution. I tell you, I have never voted for a Democrat, but this year I am proudly casting my vote for Vice President Kamala Harris.
So there's some, I mean, she's right in the sense that conservatives believe in the Constitution. Conservatives believe in limited power, separated power, the evil of man, which is why we have a government built on checks and balances, because we don't think the power ought to be concentrated in any one place. It's part of the reason that we don't think that, for example, a Democratic president like Joe Biden that consistently tries to amass more power and forgive more student loan debt and do more environmentally and push the boundaries at every nook and cranny he can find, like gun control or anywhere else, that's not the way you're supposed to operate as president. You know, the president is supposed to be an enforcer of the Constitution, too. Like, everybody swears to uphold the Constitution. And, you know, we sometimes have this mistaken notion that the Supreme Court is the one who keeps the Constitution. Like, the Supreme Court is the umpire. No, every congressman, every senator, the president, anybody who takes the oath, and honestly, any person who works for the federal government is supposed to uphold the Constitution. They are all responsible for self-avoidance, for self-denial, for saying no to things that are unconstitutional. But Joe Biden has consistently had the attitude, just like Obama did, that, well, I'm going to do whatever I want and they can tell me when to stop. And if they tell me to stop, I'll try it a different way. Like, that's not constitutionalism. Not even close to it. Okay, now, do I understand why Liz Cheney is, you know, concerned about Trump and his adherence to the Constitution? I do, actually, okay? Based on the election, all of the objections during that, the stuff with Mike Pence, I do get that. But you can't look me in the eye and say that the Biden-Harris administration has been great defenders of the Constitution, because they absolutely have not been. So it really, if you really want to be fair about this, you'd have to say, what elements of constitutionalism do they represent or violate? And what elements of constitutionalism does Trump represent or violate? And then we could have an interesting conversation. But don't sell me this nonsense like they're the great safeguarders of the Constitution after what we've seen for the last 4 years. Okay, but that's relatively small potatoes. What so offended me was this news report. The news report said that Liz Cheney is a significant figure in Republican politics.
A day after taking the stage with a prominent Republican.
Oh, prominent even. Not even significant. Prominent. Okay. Prominent figure in Republican politics. Do you know Liz Cheney's status with the Republican Party? It was revoked in November of 2021. And she was censored by the Republican National Committee in February of 2022 for her participation in voting for the impeachment of Donald Trump, the second impeachment. And then being appointed to the House Select Committee by Nancy Pelosi for being what a lot of Republicans believe was a traitor to the Republican Party. She was censured and removed from the party. She was taken off committees. Kevin McCarthy. Like, how is she a prominent Republican? She is the daughter of a prominent Republican, historically. She has been a congresswoman, but there's no Republicans out there who are like, man, Liz Cheney, she's my favorite. She's the best. She represents our party. Now, I will grant Liz Cheney that she had a lot of positions and a lot of votes historically that were right, okay? But when she decided to vote for the impeachment and go on this sham Banana Republic investigatory panel, that's when even her supporters say, yeah, that's when she lost the re-election. And she didn't. And, of course, she got voted out of office. So to call her a prominent Republican is well more than a stretch. But that's not the only thing that Frances Rivera said. Now, give some credit to poor Frances Rivera. She's the anchor for the NBC Morning News. I don't think that she wrote this copy. I think she's just reading it. So who do you blame? Do you blame her for reading the nonsense, or do you blame the editor, the person who wrote the copy? It's never quite clear. Okay, and just, by the way, to be clear, I read my own copy. If I do a news article, that's one thing, but, you know, nobody writes for me. I'm trying to think across the board, that's pretty much true. There might be some advertising stuff that's maybe a little bit, you know, I'll read what somebody else's way of phrasing it or whatever. But generally speaking, you know, if I say it, it's me saying it, okay? So here goes. Here's the second part.
Good morning. This was a site that would have seemed impossible just a few years ago.
Well, 4 years ago, but for the last several years, Liz Cheney literally sat with the Democrats on the panel. So the idea of her endorsing Kamala Harris or anybody who would run against President Trump is the most imaginable thing there is. So this is a case where NBC, and I have not watched any of the other coverage of the evening shows last night, you know, NBC, ABC, or CBS, to see how they reported on this, but this is abysmally inaccurate reporting on Liz Cheney's relationship with the Republican Party. So just I saw that and I thought we need to talk about this. 437-1620, 437-1620. If you're thinking about buying or selling a house, you're wondering if now is the right time, or you want to just make sure that you have all the factors considered, that's why you get a good real estate agent. And look, we all have, you know, the relative, the buddy, the person at church that we know, and that's fine. It's, you know, if they're the best realtor that you know and you trust them, I mean, that's great. But I do recommend that you at least interview one or two other people to see if maybe they can work better on your behalf, because you're hiring a professional for services and you want to make sure that you get your money's worth out of that professional. And okay, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they are fantastic professionals. And you know, one of the things that you can ask them about is ask her how the changing in the insurance market in Florida is affecting home sales. And if you haven't been buying or selling a home lately, you might not realize it, because it's not the kind of thing you would normally think about. Insurance is always just kind of the thing you did. Well, now insurers are putting demands on you related to the age of the roof and the water heater and, you know, the plumbing and the air conditioner. And so when somebody comes to buy your house, they might say, look, your water heater is 8 years old. You have to replace that before I buy your house. That's on you. And you might say, well, that's ridiculous. And they might say, no, that's home insurance. Well, who are you, you know, okay, ask Christina and she'll tell you, okay, that's normal. That's not normal. That's a right age. This is what we can do. And you have the comfort of knowing what's really happening in the market instead of kind of, you know, stabbing at it with somebody who only sells, you know, one or two homes a year. They sold 175 homes last year, 122 so far this year as of about a month ago. So they really know what they're doing and they know what's normal as a marketplace shifts. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Parrish packages are back, and they're featuring the number one compact tractor in the United States, the Kubota L2502 with quick attach loader, Land Pride 6-foot cutter, and Land Pride 6-foot disc, all for $29,999 cash or as low as $385 a month. Doesn't include tax, fees, or insurance. Plus, you get a free pipe top trailer. Visit them at 6701 Mobile Highway. Parrish Tractor, one of the largest Kubota dealerships in the country. 0% APR financing now through 9/30/24. See them or go to KubotaUSA.com for more information.
You depend on your vehicle.
Come on, start already.
And you need a good auto shop to depend on as well. That shop is A1 Auto and Diesel Repair, now open on North W Street. They guarantee the lowest rates in Pensacola, and they offer a 2-year national warranty on all of their work. Their certified mechanics have got you covered. No matter the problem, one call does it all. 850-285-0958. A1 Auto and Diesel Repair, 4414 North W Street, Pensacola. Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, this Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or lawn chair and relax. Enjoy the beautiful sunset with your favorite bands. This Tuesday, it's the Knee Deep Band, a high-energy variety show band with something to please all ages. It's Bands on the Beach this Tuesday night at 7 with the Knee Deep Band.
Hi, I'm Ron Helms, and I'm running to be your next county commissioner in District 4. I'm a long-term business owner, military veteran, and ordained clergy. As a fiscal conservative and Second Amendment supporter, I have a passion for public service with strong community engagement. As your next county commissioner, I will have a strong impact on crime and gun violence, affordable housing, and combating high insurance rates. I'm asking for your support and your vote on November 5th.
Paid for by Ron Helms, Democrat County Commission, District 4.
Get the Midday News live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
An attack in Panama today has left thousands dead. Taking credit were terrorists from Durkistan.
As I play that clip from Team America World Police, there's a part of me that realizes there may be two people who think there was a terrorist attack and the Durkistanis are taking credit. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We're not going to do anything because that's a line from a comedy movie. 550 on News Radio 92.3, and there is no Durkistan at this moment. Somebody sent in a good text. I hadn't seen it until just now. Because Trump is going back to Butler, Pennsylvania to do a rally at the same exact fairground site where he was shot, you know, and where, you know, Cory Comparatore was killed and two other people were shot. Same rally place. And somebody says, please tell me Trump is going to go start the rally by saying, now, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted. Yeah, he definitely should say that. That's very good. But he should not go back. He should cancel or go indoors. We had a SEAL team sniper from SEAL Team 3, who is now a U.S. congressman, tell the panel, that's not a safe location. It can't be secured properly. Dude, go inside. Because I don't want to see anything happen again. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
72 in the Asheville.
Oh, he's doing news for Cat Country at the moment, so we'll be back to us. Oh, yeah, by the way, I've been watching the roads. Speaking of him mentioning Asheville, watching the roads in and out of Asheville. I-40 to the west, and there's this long stretch of I-40 that's going to be closed for like a year, okay, when it goes north and it bends up towards Knoxville. But there is a stretch to the west for about maybe 15 or 20 miles that's open now, and the east direction is open. Now, some of the side highways are still closed, and, you know, US 26 to the north, once you get about 15 or 20 miles out of Asheville, that's closed. So there are lots of places that are still closed. Okay, lots of roads are still closed, and like the one on 26, they say that's going to be closed until March of 2025. So we have long-term road closures in the vicinity because of the flooding and the damage, obviously, and they're triaging all of it and trying to get supplies in, of course. Many of the roads have opened. 26 South out of Asheville is also open at this time. So, and all the way 74 if you want to go all the way over to Charlotte. So this is all good news. I mean, this is good news. A horrible incident with pushing 200 people we can confirm have been killed now almost, and still, you know, a couple hundred missing. It's horrible and awful, and you have still people there without power now. What was the number they had on the news? 200,000?
200,000, yeah.
So, and the reason I mention that, aside from just being aware of what's going on with these folks, and please continue to pray for them and, you know, send your relief through official channels, of course, but the one thing to keep in mind is we are now a week out. And do you remember a couple of years ago, the recommendation for emergency response, emergency management, the recommendation was to go from the first 72 is on you. Because when I came here, I'd never lived in a hurricane place before. And it was drilled into my head, the first 72 is on you, the first 3 days. And then about, 3 years ago, maybe something like that, they made the switch to 7 days ready, which is be ready for a week to live on your own with no help from anyone whatsoever. Which is a lot to do without power, without water, without food, you know, and But here we see there are still 200,000 people without power a week later. Now, there's millions with power. There's millions with water. There's millions with, right. But, you know, some of these folks are still dealing with real catastrophic isolation and problems. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, analysts predict the unemployment rate will hold steady today at 4.2%. The September jobs report will be released later this morning. Today's numbers expected to show anywhere from 140 to 150,000 jobs added. Texas is suing TikTok for violating the state's parental consent laws. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says that TikTok failed to comply with Texas laws connected with the handling of children's data. The lawsuit is asking for civil penalties of up to $10,000 per violation. And Los Angeles prosecutors reviewing an infamous murder case from the 90s, Eric and Lyle Menendez had claimed self-defense for years after years of abuse, but were convicted of killing their parents in 1989. The Los Angeles County DA says a new witness came forward saying their father had molested him as a child.
Yeah, that was the Saturday Night Live had taken that up as a joke by saying that was the joke about how incest has come to light, and you know the kids were glad their parents weren't around to see it. Like, I mean, it's actually a pretty good joke, a horrible joke, but you know that was the news is they're basically claiming that if this information had come to light in today's environment of sexual assault allegations, they might have had a fair trial. They might have been exonerated, not because they didn't do it, I guess is their argument, but because they were justified. Or maybe they'd be mitigating circumstances or something like that. So we'll see if anything changes. I would not expect much to change in this case. But, David, thanks so much for the update. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, man. I guess I would really rather not talk about it, but it is in the news. And I think it's worth talking about for one reason. Garth Brooks has been accused of sexual assault back in the day and by an anonymous claimant, Jane Doe. And he has responded that it's false and he is wanting his day in court and they're suing for, you know, suppressing and all. Okay. This is why you shouldn't name people's names if you're not going to name the person who's making the claims. Because it is completely unfair to the defendant, to Garth Brooks. And I hate saying it. Because these sexual assault allegations carry so much power just by being made that it doesn't matter whether somebody's guilty or innocent. They're guilty. He's been harmed by this. The only question is whether there's any merit to it. And, of course, in this country, we have the idea of you're innocent until you're proven guilty in a court of law. Of course, that doesn't apply to things like public perception, public image, and, you know, the sharing of information. You know, you can have your reputation destroyed even if a court declares you innocent, right? O.J. Simpson. Okay? But in this case, look, part of the problem with the sexual assault allegations, you know, the Me Too kind of era, is you've learned to believe that anybody can be an abuser. And in one way, there's a truth of that, but in another way, it's not true. Most people are not abusers. Most men are not abusers. The vast majority of men are not abusers. But because you get accustomed to this perception and these allegations, every guy lives under the shadow of being potentially accused of something like this, or you believe that maybe there's something wrong with them. I remember the first time this started to occur to me was as with my kids at a play area at a mall one time. And my wife had gone to, like, go shop or something, and I was just sitting there watching the kids. And, you know, I'm a 40-year-old guy by himself, you know, at the play area. I guess 40. I got to do the math. It was 35, 40, somewhere in that vicinity. And I got, you know, three kids running around, you know, 2 to 10 kind of vicinity. And all of a sudden, like, I bet some people think this looks weird. I didn't do anything wrong. Nobody did anything wrong. But that's the environment we live in. Well, okay, so somebody like Garth Brooks, if you ask yourself, does that seem likely? It doesn't seem very likely. Well, Andrew, somebody can seem one way and be another way. Of course. But most of the people who seem one way are just that way. You know, there's a lot of skeevy people where it comes out, and you're like, mm-hmm, that's not a surprise. So I am going to wait and find out anything else. Because one anonymous person making a claim from years ago that he totally denies that doesn't fit with anything else I've ever observed about Garth Brooks. You know, it's one thing when you have a bad reputation. It's another thing entirely when you have no bad reputation at all. And look, I understand, you know, there's the Bill Cosby. I get it. You know, something completely surprising can turn out to be true, right? But I just think you should be more cautious about how you make these allegations, report these allegations, and absolutely destroy somebody's name on the basis of an anonymous allegation from years ago that has not as yet been substantiated in any way.